When a baby is born, a star lights up somewhere in the universe, imprinted with that baby's values and purpose. And we go through life looking outside for our values. And you know what the truth is? They're inside of us. They're part of our DNA.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, Jim and Jamie back here today. I'm excited for this interview because this is a really important person in our life. Rick Sapio has been a friend and mentor for many years. We've spent lots of family time together, done business deals together, and his teachings have definitely been one of the cornerstones of the success I've had personally and professionally, not only for my own business, but also our family life, which we share a lot on. Rick, good to see you, buddy. Thanks for being here.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for the invite.
No, great to see you. And this has been a long time coming. I mean, we've spent a lot of time together in that personal and business realm. And I love your story. And I wanted to share a little bit about that. We both grew up in North Jersey, but I mean, that's not the best way for us to start, right, Rick? The North Jersey joke's coming out. But in all seriousness, I would love for you to share kind of your early childhood and what you faced, where you were, and, you know, the tragedy with your dad, just so people understand.
Yeah. So I want to juxtaposition what I'm about to talk about with how most of us raise our kids. And most of us raise our kids following them around, having their big, fluffy, soft pillow, just in case they fall down and their butt is about to touch the ground. I got to have a pillow. And we're doing that from 0 to 18. And we wonder why they can't get along in the world. And yet I come from 9 kids. I grew up in North Jersey, Hoboken and Hasbrook Heights, and I was born in 1963. So the 70s were not a great time. It reminds me of what's going on today in the world, what the 70s were like, with just a lot of hatred and a lot of brutality, let's call it. I didn't see a lot of police officers when I was a kid. And unfortunately, when I was very young, my brother died. He was 4. And when I was 13, my dad died tragically from cancer. He was 49. So there was 9 kids in North Jersey with a mother who was, you know, it's public now, but she was unstable mentally. I never had a conversation with my mom in my entire life, not one. And so fast forward, the 9 kids could have turned into who knows what. There was gangs and drugs and mafia in New York City. I used to go to New York City on my bicycle when I was a teenager, and it was not a pretty place. People remember the grit of Times Square in the 70s, but all of us got married. All of us had children. I've got 44 nieces and nephews and no divorces. Wow. With my siblings. Wow. Which is pretty crazy. And it's a testament to what my dad did do is he instilled values in us. Look, if you're a Sapio, you do hard things. And you figure out how to get by in life, and you're honest and ethical in your business dealing. And I wrote a book about it, not particularly about that story per se, but more about values-based decision-making. And it's called Who's in Your Room? And it's the subtitle is The Secret to Creating Your Best Life. And it was a number one bestseller at one point a few years ago, which is cool. But the whole point of Who's in Your Room is imagine that your life and your family's life is contained in a room. And who and what you let into that room determines your destiny. What people, what business partners, what girlfriends and boyfriends, what habits, drugs and whatnot. And your room is a reflection of your life. And I often say that a room is one way in, no way out. So when you let someone into the room of your life, they're there forever. And people debate me on that. And they say, well, what if I got divorced 30 years ago and my ex-wife is not in my room? And I go, how do you feel about her? I hate that bitch. So they stay with you forever. So every decision you make to have someone enter the room of your life or into your family's life, they're with you forever. So what would it be like if you had a set of values that dictate these are the things, checkbox, we check these boxes that determine who and what I let into the room of my life. So that's that in a nutshell. And that upbringing juxtapositioned against how, looking back now, we had these values that determine who and what led into our life. And look, we make mistakes. And I know when I make a mistake, and you know when you make a mistake, but you learn from them. And I always say that your gut can only make yes, no questions. That's true. So your gut thinks yes, no, and your brain rationalizes 1,000 things. And your gut is God uttering truth. Every time I violate God uttering truth, I pay. Sometimes I pay a lot more than others.
Well, I think you said something powerful to me one time in our discussion. You said, every time I've gone into a business deal against my values, or the person didn't share the values, it's gone wrong. Every time.
Yeah, it's just a matter of when.
Yeah.
It could be 5 years from now. It could be 10 years from now. It could be tomorrow.
And I'd love to unpack that, though. So again, I love that story about, look, really the choices for below normal income guy growing up in Hoboken in the 70s, your choice was mafia or drugs, really. Those were the two main paths, right? And so you had to steer away from them, which values did for you. But this value-based decision-making, Rick, I want to unpack that because I don't know if a lot of people actually know what that means. I mean, what is a value-based decision?
So, and that's a great question. Unless you, Jamie, Jim, Rick, everyone listening, unless you're clear on what your values are, they have to be written out, memorized, and used to make decisions. So you're making decisions in alignment with your values or not. Presupposes that you have them written down. So that's what it is. Let's say, for example, that my value is health. One of my values is health. Well, I'm probably not going to drink a fifth of Jack Daniels tonight. You know, it's going to determine my actions. I'm probably not going to hang out with people that are 400 pounds and eat Wendy's three meals a day. It determines what you do. If one of my values is having a close family, so I'm probably not going to, well, I won't cheat on my wife. But people that don't have a compass because their values aren't written down, how the hell do they know that the next decision they're going to make is a great decision or a colossal disaster?
Now, Rick, how do you begin to establish something like this? So we talk a lot about values and guiding others through that. But as a family man, talk to us a little bit about the difference between personal values and family values. And how do you arrive at a place in which you know what your compass is?
That's a really good question, Jamie. And I think, and I heard this a long time ago, that when a baby is born, there's a star that lights up somewhere in the universe because there's a billion stars out there. It's an old Vedic astrologer said this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I operate as if I believe it. When a baby is born, a star lights up somewhere in the universe, imprinted with that baby's values and purpose. And we go through life looking outside for our values. And you know what the truth is? They're inside of us.
Yeah.
They're part of our DNA. And that's why you could see in your kids, they each have a couple of things, but they each have a purpose and values that resonate with them. But unless those values are pulled out through a series of conversations and debate and time, people don't want to invest time anymore. What do we do with kids in front of a screen? And they look down and they get sore thumbs for the rest of their life. So I think it is hundreds of hours of conversation with your kids and with your spouse and with your friends. What are my values? The first one should be easy. I could ask you and everybody listening right now, what is your number one primary overriding value? And if you don't have that, like for me, it's simplicity. People say, well, how come it's not family? Because with my chaotic life, being an entrepreneur and a business owner and travel, if I didn't have simplicity as a primary value, I wouldn't be able to have family dinner every night. I wouldn't be able to go on date night every Monday night for 17 years with my wife. So for me, overriding value is simplicity. And it's funny, we were talking about my son before the call, and you ask Luke, he's 14, what's your value? Your primary value, he'll say perseverance. And he'll give you examples why. So, yeah, so what is yours?
I was just going to say, what's yours? Do you know?
Mine would be integrity.
That's mine.
Good thing we're married.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, mine. And I did.
Maybe
this.
I was just reading your mind and that's not actually mine.
It could be.
Gosh, I got to think about that. These superpowers get in the way sometimes.
So I would define what it means, because integrity means different things to different people. And I'm going to challenge you guys. Integrity is, I think there's natural laws. And I think that fits more into that. That's really everybody's value, or should be, because it's a human thing. But I think that there's something more important than that. Not more important. That's probably not the right way to say it. but more primary for you as an individual.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
I'll stay open.
So if you read my values list, it says, here are my values, but I also subscribe to natural laws and the Ten Commandments as guiding principles. So integrity is one of those. So this is deep. And the people that have done the work and come to me over the years and said, I did it, and I finally have it. Here it is. And it changed my life. Because I think we soft step this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I think it's something, like you said, in relationships, it's absolutely key to know if you're, and this is not only something that you could call out, this relationship is not serving me because it doesn't tie to these values that I have, honesty and abundance for all.
So I'm holding in my hand our family placemat, which has our values on. I'm going to answer Jamie's questions from earlier. The good thing about having your values on a document, which is on our kitchen table, it's got our values, our family crest, what our marriage means to us, our wedding vows, etc., is our kids can hold us accountable and say, Mom, you're not honoring that. Dad, you're not honoring that. So our family's core values, which to your question, Jamie, I think you need to declare values for a family or for a company. And what happens is by declaring them, it attracts the right behaviors and the right employees in the case of a company. So ours are, I'll just read one of them out, but each one of them has a sentence after it. So the first one is simplicity. We enjoy keeping all aspects of our lives as simple as possible. We avoid extravagance. We avoid toys and demonstrations of wealth. We enjoy keeping our debts low and our lives very simple. So each one has that. So the values are simplicity, personal growth, maintaining deep relationships, teamwork, making money. And part of making money is giving it away too, which is another value. But making money, the next one is physical and spiritual well-being. The next one is family. And the next one is charity. So those are our family's values. And so I can use this with my kids and go, hey, how is this physical and spiritual well-being? Because my 8-year-old is a candy holic. If I found it in his room, then I take his candy.
That's funny.
So that's why I could show him his value. Go, how is this physical and spiritual well-being?
I love that. And the important thing, like you said, if people don't get their values down, they cannot make value-based decisions. But once they do have values and they're making value-based decisions, and that's kind of their strainer, that's where I think for, you know, and I love your book, Who's Your Room? That's when the doorman principle really kicks in, right? That's when the doorman truly can guard the room for better or for worse. And will you explain that? I mean, that's something that sticks with me all the time, the doorman principle.
Yeah. So the doorman principle is something we came up with about 20 years ago to explain to anybody what it is. So I have this imaginary doorman. And so oftentimes it happened to me this morning, a guy's mad at me because I couldn't accept being on his board. And he's like, why can't you, Rick? And I said, I really appreciate you asking me, but my doorman won't let me do it. He's like, who the hell's your doorman? And I said, I've got a doorman. And he sits at the room of my life and he looks at my values. And unfortunately, I cannot honor the value of simplicity by being on your board. So I won't honor my value and I won't honor the role. So I'm completely, I forget the word I use, but humbled by the fact that you asked me, but I'm not going to be a good board member if I'm not honoring my values. So thank you. So it gives me and you and anybody the opportunity to blame it on somebody, but also people to accept it when you explain it that way.
Yeah, it's you being mindful of yourself and of them, because the worst thing to do is not show up fully, right?
Yeah, and to your point there, if when you get into a relationship and you know in your gut it's not going to work, what happens? A day goes by, a week goes by, a year goes by, 5 years go by, and you're like, ugh! And then when you finally divorce that relationship, it's an effing nightmare. And oftentimes you knew day one. I've got a funny story about that. I have a friend, Bob, we'll call him, and he had this secretary for like 7 years, and he found out that she stole 200 grand from him. And I've known Bob 30 years. So I'm like, when are you going to fire her? He goes, oh, I got to get the FBI and they got to do some research. And where's the 200 grand and this and that. And this guy went round and round and round with this assistant. Guess when he fired her? 18 years later. And people are shocked by that story. But how many relationships go 18 years too long?
Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking of, Rick? I got to bring this up. I'm going to hide names. You brought me up to speak. Thank you very much. Well, you and Barrett and a few others of our friends to your Gathering of Titans group, which is an incredible group I've gotten to attend a few times now. And you have me do my talk on alternative education, the lessons that Jamie and I try to teach that aren't taught in school. our matrix of education. Do you remember me coming up to
of course. I remember you ducked every time I threw a tomato at you.
Exactly. Well, I give this talk and I'm pretty nervous. You're like, you got to share this. This is gold. This is what these guys want to hear. And that was a very powerful room, as you know, billionaires and everything in there. And if you remember, there was another guest speaker there. I'm not going to say of a very large company that came in, CEO, and he was enthralled by the talk. And he contacted you and I post the event and said, that was incredible. I see this as a huge thing. I want to get you on a phone with a guy, the four of us on the phone with a person that has national attention.
He's famous.
Yeah, he was very famous. And you and I get on the phone. And right before we get on the phone, we get the name. And you said, hey, do you recognize this name? I'm like, it seems familiar. Well, this person was very controversial, had some run-ins with the law for different political things and that. He had a huge following, but you said, we'll listen, but this is the guy. And you and I got on the call, and I'll never forget, about 10 minutes, I'm excited because this guy, the CEO of this huge company is on, all excited. This guy gets on and starts pitching to us, but we asked him like one or two questions. And it was pretty awkward, the answers that he gave. And it was really foundational. And I remember you going, hey, guys, let's just stop right here. This isn't going to work. This isn't something we need to pursue. I really appreciate it. And the call was done. And I call you back and I'm like, yo, what the hell? Like, we should have at least turned him out a little bit more. Like, those were big names. Like, you're like, you know that one guy. You know that he's had not just press, but bad press. Said, Jim, I just saved us 5 years of headache. And I was like, wow, you're right. And now I've seen that person continue to you know, have all sorts of things, but that doesn't matter. But you were like, it was done. It can be cut so early with the doorman principle. And of course, at first I'm like, all right, I trust you. But I was like, God dang, you were right. Like, that would have been a nightmare. It seemed exciting in the beginning. Even we look at high profile people or that, but you cut it off. So I saw the doorman principle firsthand with that example.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And honestly, right now, as you tell the story, there's about three situations in my life that I have to nip in the bud right now, because I could just envision them getting worse and worse and worse. And also my personal life, I tell my wife all the time, say no to stuff, honey. I love the quote from Warren Buffett. He says, the difference between people who are successful in life and people who are extremely successful is people who are extremely successful say no to almost everything and only say yes to things that completely align with their values, their purpose, and their important objectives. And so I have to tell my wife often, don't do that anymore. We don't need any more people at the house. We don't need any more commitments. And so our family life and our kids' lives are relatively simple for having four young kids. And as you know, there's a lot of chaos in the world. So thank you for the reminder. And that story is true. And I remember saying it and I knew you were going to be mad at me, but I've done that a lot. And people call me back and they're like, you're an asshole. Why'd you do that? And then 5 years later, they're like, I can't believe it. I went around your back, did business with them anyway, and got screwed. So
I never called him again. I was like, I got this guy's email now. I could email anytime. I'm like, nah. And sure enough, that's continued to play out. I'm glad I stayed away from.
But if you recall, it wasn't just that. The fact, it was probably what, 6 or 7 years ago, I can't remember. But it wasn't just the fact that he was infamous. He was famous, right? And most people would ignore his infamy or whatever the negatives are. But it was what he was saying too. Like, I decided, let me give him a chance. And then as he was talking, I'm like, no, this is never. And they saw the issue so much differently than we saw it too. So, well, thanks for bringing that up. Well, we got to talk about the big news. So here you guys are, you have four kids, you're crazy busy, you're entrepreneurs, you're changing the world with this podcast, and you bring a little tiny baby into the world who's 2 weeks old. Can you show us Gloria? Is she there?
She actually made this podcast. Well, I'm going to share something with the tribe, Rick. So we're
look
down
at that. Well, hang on before you go. So here, look how busy. They got four kids and a fifth, and they're doing a podcast. Nobody has an excuse. Go ahead.
Well, no, and this ties into Gloria. So we're down. We get together with you every summer in the Keys. And our host, Barrett, our mutual friend, is hosting the event. He started that morning with the question, if you could do anything and not fail, what would it be? And this was going around to all us adults and all the kids all the way from 4 to adulthood. And if you remember, Maggie was sitting over with your family. She went over and she sat with your family. She wasn't even with us. You know, the kids were spread out, but she was having fun with your daughter and sitting with you and Melissa. And Barrett went around and I had been saying, look, I need a God wink. Are we going to do another kid? Like, we've talked about this. We tried to do adoption through Central America. It was just a nightmare. Jamie was starting to look maybe at going national in the US. And we were thinking about it. So you're kind of looking for that nudge. And Barrett goes around and Maggie's sitting over there with you guys. And Barrett said, what would you do if you could not fail? And if you remember, she stood up and just said, I would just have a little sister.
Yeah.
And so I'm like getting teary eyed. I'm like, I turn to Jamie. I'm like, okay, it's done. Go ahead and do what you have to. I think she called about 17 adoption agencies at the lunch that day from the Keys.
Well, what's great is, you know, the other side. So this is what's beautiful about family values, right? As we're speaking of. So Jim and I do have shared values. We have our shared family values. And even in this situation, such a paramount, huge thing, it took both of us to be on the same page. Really, it took our entire family, had to be our children as well, had to be all of that. But what's funny is Jim's like, oh, you know, were we done? Are we done? He kind of had this attitude. My heart from a young child had a big desire to do this. And then after my grandmother passed, it just kept welling up like, oh, I can do big things. I can do heart, like, and it just kept, it wouldn't die. And sometimes I would weep and be like, how am I going to do this if he says no? Because Jim was kind of on a no. And I'm like, gosh, our values, and we see so alike on so many things, but like, God, like, what does this mean? Like, where's he going? Because I'm going to do this. God, please work on his heart. And what was so amazing is when he cracked that day and he looked at me with tears in his eyes and he's like, now or never. I was like, I got this, you know, but it's because we, even though we, our path was slightly different, we were both moving in the same direction because of those shared core values, just like you're saying. And I think it's important to share stories like that, that show we're not always exactly on the same page, but we're going in the same direction.
If you resurface those values often, you'll find that the bigger decisions in life, you have more clarity and you're on the same page about. Melissa and I never fight about the big stuff. We only fight about the little stuff because the big stuff, we're so aligned. And that's interesting about business and life. You know, the shit that gets you in trouble in business is taking a meeting or doing a business deal or something that's just, it's small, but it becomes a big problem later on because it violated your values. And I think life for me is a whole lot easier when I only make big chunky decisions in business and none of the little ones. And the little ones, like sometimes I look, just to give you an extreme example, I look at my calendar, I'm slam busy on something big and I got 30 minute calls all day long. None of them mean anything, but you know, it's a series of saying yes to irrelevant things that don't align that cause problems later.
Well, you know, it's powerful too, Rick. The fact you just brought that up, and this is kind of that who's in your room. Look, you just said that we have obviously very aligned values on a lot of things. And you just said that with excitement, gratitude for us that, oh, you got your fifth. Other people, and this is no judgment, this is just a fact. Other people would be like, are you insane? How old are you? What are you doing? Like, what is this? Are you like some sort of like extra religious thing? And it's like, well, no. And it's whatever they're saying, it would be such a disservice to what we were focusing on.
It was incongruent. So we don't, our heart and our values, but well, you get it.
We wouldn't share with people. That's why we're pretty, as even though we get to spend a lot of time with cool people, we're pretty private with smaller groups of people. This isn't something we shared heavily. I mean, we shared it with you and some others, and you were like, that's incredible. That's awesome. Because I knew I would be able to get the reinforcement on that value. Why would I go to someone about that who doesn't share my values and say, hey, we might adopt a fifth child as a little girl, a baby, who's going to just poo-poo all over that? Anyway, I just want to give respect to you. But this is the importance, I think, of that doorman principle and who's in your room. Because if you let the right people in your room, I got to tell you, people like you and a few others were so supportive all along the way. It does make things easier.
We live in a broken world. Like, people don't want to have kids, don't want to get married. I read a study that a quarter of 25-year-olds have decided that they want to get surgery so that he can have kids. I forget what that's called. And you think Ronald Reagan had a quote. He said that the interesting thing about all pro-choice is they all have one thing in common. They were born. And these people that are anti-family and anti-marriage and anti-kids, they all have one thing in common. They were born. And it's just weird to think about it like that. It would be like me walking around saying, I hate having two hands. Like, that's stupid. Well, I have two hands. Like, well, you have two hands. If you just put a bullet in your head then, or chop your hands off if you don't agree with life. It's just not to get too, I'm looking not to get too deep in that part, but just the common sense side of it. Yeah. How could you be anti-family and anti-kid and you're a human being who was born? It's just bizarre. Yeah.
No, but it's important to, you know, be aware of things that are different from you, but not to allow them into your space and into your world, right? So it would be, as Jim's saying, just seeking counsel from those that can build you up opposed to tear you down, I think is where we're getting at. You know, like your board of advisors and such, as you are to us.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And, you know, I feel like I have to, because the world is so, what's the right word? Sensitive. You're not allowed to speak your truth. What I just said and what we've said is our truths, and the people listening are going to have their truth. And you know what? That's what makes the world go round. And I think it's important to get to your truth, write it down. What's your purpose? What are your values? Whatever they are what they are. They're part of who you are and your DNA. And if you believe the story, whether you believe it or not, actually, it's a good metaphor that there's a star out there imprinted with your name and your values and your purpose and your important life objectives.
I love that.
Are these guiding principles things that you instill in your children at the youngest of ages? They're born knowing that these are our values and this is the roadmap for how the Sapios are.
We try, and you have to be relentless. I remember we had a pediatrician when they were young, and I said how many times do you have to say something to a kid before they get it? He says 10,000 and then 10,000 more and then 10,000 more, and they still won't get it. So I think about brands that you like to interact with. You know what they stand for, and they repeat it over and over and over and over again because people don't pay attention. They don't listen. So you've got to instill your principles on people every day. And people are like, well, that's tiring. And I said, well, how often do you tell your spouse you love them? Do you say, I told you 5 years ago I love you?
It wouldn't go so well, would it?
But isn't that true? I mean, you just have to repeat yourself. Child rearing is a handful of rules repeated over and over and over.
Yeah, I love that.
That nobody listens to.
But then you wake up when they're, because you know, I really believe this in my heart of hearts. I think that adolescence, 13 and on, was invented. 150 years ago, someone came along and said, you know, we got this industrial revolution. We got to create adolescence in school. And prior to that, if you wanted to be a welder, you were an apprentice.
So now
what happens? We invent adolescence. So now we got kids that should be going out into the world. Like my son is going away to school next year in high school at 14. They should be going on their own. They should be carving their spot in the world. What are they doing? They're sitting down playing video games, getting addicted to pornography and drugs and alcohol. And that lasts through high school, through college, through their 20s. A 28-year-old today is considered a kid. That is absurd. That is so incredibly stupid. It makes no sense. So I think we have to look at young people, 13, 14, 15, as, you know what? You're an adult. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? Let's start forming adults early. Why wait? It makes no sense to me.
I agree. I remember
empowering them is important.
I remember hearing one time, if school does such a good job, you know, they get out after 13 years. A person that's gone to 13 years of schooling, if it was that successful, shouldn't a kid be able to not be getting out and begging for a job? Shouldn't they be in the position to be offering jobs to others? And that was such a shift for me to say, how do I make it where my children at the end of school could be in the position to be offering jobs instead of begging for a job?
It's true. I love it.
It's a powerful thing. So,
by the way, I saw a title of a book. I don't know if it's a good book or a bad book, but it says America, One Nation Under Therapy, because we've actually created a generation of kids just need therapy because they're not motivated to do anything.
Yeah, I agree.
Rick, well,
I was going to say, I know we could chat with you all day, but I would love for you to tell our audience, where can they find your book?
Who's in your room? I guess they can go to Amazon. I don't have a website. I don't have any of that stuff.
It used to be just whosinyourroom.com. At one point, that's the only place I could find it at one point.
That's where we bought it.
Really? Well, when it's now on Amazon. It's funny that you bring that up, because when we first launched it, we did a big campaign. That's how it became a bestseller. And then we shifted to Amazon because it was too hard to manage. Yeah. And then it went all the way down the rankings. But anyway, it's a great book. It's a great book.
Yeah. Our boys have read it. We've read it. So we recommend it. So we
it's
love it.
It's a great book for adolescents.
Yes, sir.
Final question.
Final question, my man. 75-year-old Rick, like we started 2 years ago asking this question to ourselves, you know, going into the pandemic, I needed a wiser version of myself to be handling what we were facing. And we came out of it well. So we started to say, what do you think our 75-year-old selves would be saying to us right now? And it became kind of a classic question we've been asking, because we're looking ahead to our more wiser, older self. You know, what do you think 75-year-old Sapio would say to you today and to all of us? And make it nothing dirty or raunchy, please.
I feel like we could do a podcast called 75 Sapio, and then he just gets on and says some random shit every day.
Well, what's weird, I don't talk about this as often, but the people that are that are watching the video, they won't believe this, but I'm 76. So I could say,
look backwards.
What happened last year? No, here's the weird thing. So I'm 58 and I started my company 28 years ago in this office that I'm in right now. Wow. So 28 years from now, I'll be 86. Am I doing the math right? Is that crazy? So when I think about the day I walked into this office, that I would be here almost 30 years later, it's just so incredibly hard to fathom. Thousands of times in and out of the parking garage, thousands of meetings. It's crazy to think about. But I would say, you know, when my wife and I got married, we wrote a paragraph that said, here's our life in 50 years. And it was a lot of things on there. But the thing that I remember is we're 85. We have our great grandchildren running around. We're sipping hot chocolate in front of the fire at our mountain home in Colorado. It's snowing outside, and you describe the scene. And what that scene does is it instills in the marriage longevity. Because what happens is if you don't have a scene in the future, then when you have a fight, you're running for the exits. Well, maybe we should get divorced. This didn't work out. You're not creating some future vision like that. And so my 75-year-old self, I would say, stay on the vision, because I've got a vision of myself at 100 that I've written out, and just stay the course. And oftentimes, even now at 58, am I doing the right thing coming to the same office for 28 years? Am I letting the world down by not doing bigger deals or different deals or other deals? But I just always go back to stay the course. And for Melissa and I, we've written down all this on our family placement. It's right there. All I have to do is consult it. So I don't know if that is a good answer or not, but that's the answer that comes to mind right now.
Fantastic. I love that vision.
Staying the course. That's something you taught me when I first started this family mission with Jamie 10 years ago. You said, buddy, you're going to stand on a mountaintop by yourself for a while.
Beat that drum.
Don't stop. Stay on that same mountain. Don't move mountain. Stay on that mountain. Beat the drum. All of a sudden, people down in the village are going to start hearing that. They're going to know where to find you. They're going to start coming to you. So I mean that sincerely. Thank you for that advice, because here we are 10 years later doing some pretty good things for family, I think. And that's some of the best advice I ever got. And that was from you.
You guys are doing amazing things. And thank you for carrying that torch and reproducing 5 times and maybe another one, because now Sammy's gonna say, I want a brother. That's not fair. She got a sister.
We've decided if we have another one, we're gonna gift them to you and Melissa.
Yeah. Vinny needs a punching bag.
Vinny's a sweetheart. He would be all hugged. So, but Rick, we love you, buddy. Thanks for coming on today. We'll be seeing you soon. And until next time, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
See you. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.